Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nation. That's Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Camaro Dave and Commander Chris coming to you from our beautiful and elaborate Turn It, Don't Burn It studios here in Portland and coming to you today via your network on the Sun and Vision Radio Networks. Well, it's Memorial Day. It's the biggest barbecue weekend of the year, according to some. And it's the first big barbecue weekend officially. So I thought of nobody better than to bring my buddy Meathead Goldwyn from AmazingRibs.com on the show, which we usually use Meathead on the show prior to every holiday. So in keeping with that tradition, he's here today. Also, we'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef the way nature intended it to be. That's PaintedHillsNaturalBeef.com. And a little George Thorogood in between the segments here so you guys can enjoy it. Meathead and I can't hear it, but you can. Anyway, Meathead, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Happy holiday, and I'm sorry. I want to hear George Thorogood.
Okay, Bad to the Bone. That's the opening song in this show, the Bad to the Bone. So
that's a perfect barbecue song.
Oh, it is. Hey, what do you normally do on Memorial Day weekend? I mean, is it kind of a festival on the grill sort of for you?
Not a festival, but we have the neighbors over, and I'll usually do something smoked, usually ribs. Everybody loves ribs. It's, I think, America's favorite cookout food. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of people are intimidated by it. They're afraid to cook ribs. They don't understand that they've got to be cooked low and slow. And so they just heat up the grill and throw them on the grill. And, you know, they pull them off when they get too dark. And by then, they're, you know, just really chewy. And
right.
They don't taste anything like a good slab of ribs should taste. So I like to do ribs for them. I've got a couple of good-sized smokers that'll handle a big crowd. And there's always chicken for people that don't eat pork and hot dogs for the kids and some hamburgers. And my wife's neighbors and friends and family, I don't know how broadly this is a tradition around the country, but they all bring a dish.
Right.
You know, they all bring a dish to pass, and they know don't bring any meat, so they bring all just a heck of a spread, everything from they all know I'm addicted to Cheetos. So they all bring a bag of Cheetos and a side dish.
so you got
here,
the,
it's going to be sad. It'll probably just be my wife and me, and my neighbor Jeff won't come. And,
well, it's just the time we're in right now, and this too shall pass. So, eventually. And so you're standing around with orange cakey fingers and orange lips from eating Cheetos.
Where am I going to get my Cheetos? I got to go shopping.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well,
hey, you know, there's some good that may come of this. And that is people are learning how to cook.
Yeah.
And when this is all over, I think we'll see that more and more people know how to cook. More and more people know more about food, understand more about food. That this is, I think, the third wave of the American culinary revolution. The first wave was Julia Child and James Beard and Craig Claiborne and MFK Fisher, that crowd back in the 50s and 60s. And then came the Food Network, and that really taught a lot of people. I know people who don't cook at all, but they still are addicted to watching the Food Network. And now this, people are forced to cook. I know that a lot of people are still ordering out. We've gone out to local restaurants for carry out, and there's a lot of people standing in line waiting to get their carry out or cars wrapped around the corner. But still, people are cooking. I know that our website, traffic is up 80% for the month of May. I was talking with the people over at Milk Street. Christopher Kimball is a friend. In fact, he's interviewing me this week. His website's up over 100%. So people are really knuckling down and learning how to grill and cook. So if there's any silver lining, if a restaurant survives this thing, they're going to have more knowledgeable and more adventurous customers, I think.
Right. I do, too. So here is a question, and I think our listeners would be very surprised about how many times I actually get this question, but I get it a lot. What is the proper temperature, given a range, and time, et cetera, to cook a hot dog? Now, you've been to, and people may say, what, Tracy, have you lost your mind? No, because if you go to a backyard barbecue, there's somebody that's always cooking the dogs and stuff for the people who don't want to eat ribs or chicken or steaks or whatever, but mostly for the kids. 90% of the time, they get one side that's really black and charred, and then the other side has got a few little bubbles under the skin and that, and it's really not that delectable, if you will. So let's lay it out there for America, Meathead. Let's tell them the proper way to cook a hot dog or a sausage.
Let's dive in a hot dog. All right. I don't think you want it burned. Black is carbon, and it doesn't have great flavor. But with most meats, they're at their optimum flavor when they're dark brown or when they're on the edge of burn, before they burn. That dark brown is a chemical reaction called the Maillard reaction, and it creates a lot of flavor. It's when protein alters its structure. And so darkening, like when you're searing a steak, is a good move, or a burger. So the best way to do that, though, is don't give it all she's got, Scotty, because then you can't control it. It's easier to control lower temperatures than higher temperatures. You don't want to jump off a bus that's moving fast.
Right.
Or jump onto a bus, catch a bus. You're trying to catch the bus here, so dial it back. Keep the temperature down. And now this sounds really goofy. People always lay the hot dogs across the grates. I lay them between the grates.
Right.
Just like those roller machines that you see in the Walmart.
Right.
If you lay them between the grates, you get stripes that go the lengthwise instead of across. They look goofy, but if you lay them between the grates, you can cook it. They'll lay flat. They'll stay in one spot, and then you can roll it to the next grate, which is almost always a quarter turn. Roll it to the next grate. Roll it. So you can turn them really in incremental spots and get them evenly colored throughout, plus you get the grill marks on the sides. Now, there's a couple of tricks that I like to do. I like to take the hot dog, and I get a paring knife, and I take the paring knife, and I cut an X in the ends. And when you do that, the ends flare open, and like a tulip,
right,
on both ends, and they char a little. They get a little crispy and crunchy. I like crispy and crunchy on anything. I just told you I like Cheetos.
Yep.
and they flare open that way. Now, I know a lot of people that like to split them down the middle and butterfly them, and that, of course, gets them crispy and crunchy, and you get no more brown down the center. And there's another fun technique you can do that kids love, is you can make a spiral. If you lay it on a cutting board and you'll get a sharp knife, you can rotate the hot dog, and if you hold the knife at an angle, you can cut it so that it looks like a screw, and it has lots of edges there that will get crispy. That's a fun technique, too. Hot dogs have been technically have been par cooked. You don't have to cook them all the way up to 165 degrees, although that's that 165 is sort of like your absolutely safest temperature.
Sure.
You kill almost all bacteria instantaneously. That's why we say 160, 165 on poultry, because they're almost always contaminated in some fashion, and you can pasteurize them at that temp. Hot dogs probably, I think the USDA number is 145 or 150, something like that. So you don't have to go that high. I was at a Chicago Bears game last year, and I saw something that absolutely blew me away, and I was just thrilled to see it. I went over to the hot dog stand. It wasn't a vendor. It was during intermission. And I went to the hot dog stand, and the kid was actually temping with a digital thermometer. He'd stick it in the end, every single hot dog and Polish sausage and bratwurst before he put them in the bun. Now, that is food safety at its best.
Yep.
And you know, you can do that. I mean, it's no fun on Memorial Day to take Randy to the hospital.
No. No, it's not. Speaking of going to the hospital, we're not going to do that, but we're going to take a break. Meathead and I are going to be back here on Barbecue Nation. Please stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef.
I come in last night about a half past ten. That baby of mine wouldn't let me in. So move it on over.
Welcome back here to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We're talking with Meathead from Amazing Ribs. If you'd like to email us, it's very simple. It's barbecuebbq@salempdx.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Barbecue Nation with JT, and Twitter and Instagram and all those places. So if you have a passion to spend your afternoons fooling around with social media, you can find both Meathead and myself under different headings, of course, but we're out there. So, we were talking off the air about Polish sausages because I said Polish sausages are my favorites. I like brats.
I'm with you all the way, pal.
Yeah. I like regular hot dogs. I like them all, but you give me a Polish sausage and man, I'm happy. So,
well, you know, all right. First of all, when you're talking Polish sausage, let's go to Poland. I mean, Poland and Italy probably make more encased meats than anybody. And, of course, in Poland, the kielbasa, which is generic for a sausage, but they must have 100 different varieties. I don't know much about them. Here, what we call polis or Polish sausages bear a resemblance to what that we call kielbasa in this right. country. But they're more like a garlicky bratwurst. They're really, they're a rough grind,
right.
coarse grind, rather than a hot dog, which is a very fine grind. They all have a natural casing. Usually it's hog's guts, but loaded with garlic, and what flavor and texture and give me a poli whenever. And I've noticed when I travel that they're not the same everywhere you go.
No.
And I think that's because a lot of butchers make their own sausages and they have their own house recipe. And they're really different. I mean, here in Chicago, for example, Italian sausage, which is a popular thing around town.
Sure.
They're really different from butcher to butcher, from grocer to grocer.
Well, I think you find a lot of old family recipes, too, when you go to those individual butchers. I know here we've got like Mount Angel Sausage Company, Zenner's, and some of those, and they're all kind of famous, especially Mount Angel Sausage, because they make they hand make all their sausage. They only do it, you know, on certain days of the week. I mean, they make tons of it, and it's all good and it's great. But their poli recipe, their kielbasa recipe, is a little different than what you're going to go find if you buy one out of the case at Safeway, for example.
And I should mention, I forgot, that polis typically are smoked at the factory, so whereas bratwursts are not. Sausage, you know, encased meats is a really fascinating topic, and if you can really dive deep on them. There's even a couple of really great Greek sausages out there that I'm fond of. Now, those you want to cook to 155. You've got to cook those a little hot, because whenever you grind meat, any contamination that may be on the surface can get to the center. So, especially if it hasn't been pre-cooked. Hot dogs are pre-cooked, so they've been pasteurized at the factory. I mean, technically, you could eat them raw, but you don't want to. You want to cook them. So they can go up to 145 since they've been cured and cooked. But 155 on most other sausages, and you want to get that that casing golden or brown and snappy. You want to crunch into them.
Yes.
A lot of people poke holes in them to drain the fat, which I guess, you know, will save you a few calories, but you're draining a lot of the moisture out.
And a lot of the flavor.
You'll end up with a dry sausage.
Yeah.
I don't know. My theory is you don't eat sausages and hot dogs every day. On the rare occasions that you do, maybe leave the fat in, you know? I mean,
yeah.
give it the what it's got in there. Let it let it show off.
Okay, so here's my question for you, and I'm gonna give you mine first. My answer to this question first: how do you like your sausages when you eat them? Now, if I'm eating a Polish sausage or a kielbasa, and I'll eat all of them, but those are my two faves. Okay, what I like on them is I like a bit of relish, a bit of mustard, and a bit of sauerkraut. And some onion, and some onions, little onions. I don't overdo any one of them. Sometimes you see these guys on TV and it's just loaded up with crap, you know, and it's like smell. I don't do that. Being a cook, you know, I try to enhance the flavor. That's just my weird way of doing things. But I do like that. I like a little relish, a little good old fashioned yellow mustard on it, some onions, and a little sauerkraut. What is Meathead like?
I'm pretty close to you. Make a South Carolina mustard barbecue sauce, which is really just a barbecue sauce. A yellow ballpark mustard that's a little sweeter and it's got a lot of herbs in it. And I make that as a barbecue sauce, and I have just replaced ballpark mustard with that.
Sure.
I use that whenever I'm doing a hot dog or a sausage, but it's a variation on the mustard theme, and I love it. I like both raw and caramelized onions, and I've been known to put them both on a sausage, and that's about it. Now, I'm in the Chicago area, and it's a sin to use ketchup on a hot dog or a sausage in Chicago. I was in a restaurant once, and there was a tourist in front of me in line, and he ordered a Chicago. He says, "I'll have a hot dog Chicago style." And the guy assembled the sausage. It's got seven. Chicago hot dogs have seven toppings, and we call it dragging it through the garden. And the guy says, "No ketchup." And the guy says, "We don't put ketchup on a hot dog in Chicago. There's a pump over there for ketchup for the French fries. You want ketchup on your hot dog? Go ruin it yourself."
I love that. I love that.
Actually, I was driving down the highway the other day, and they have these big overhead signs that tell you when there's street construction going on.
Right.
And it was flashing, and don't put ketchup on your hot dog. Somebody in the highway department was having fun.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. Yeah, I don't know. Ketchup, no. I can put a little ketchup on hamburgers. That's fine, but no sausage.
Yep, I like it on hamburgers.
Yeah, no, it's
although
good.
Interestingly, when you think about it, hamburger really is just a sausage. It just doesn't have a casing.
Right.
You know, hamburgers, meatloaf, hot dogs, sausages, they're all ground meats. I mean, even ground salmon. I make salmon patties. They're all cousins. They're all ground meats.
No, that is absolutely true. We're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. Meathead and I'll be back in just a couple minutes. Please stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation, everybody. I'm JT, along with Meathead today. I'd like to thank the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your friends and family. And they make sausages, too, and they're really good. They're burning Germans. They'll light you up a little bit. So check it out at PaintedHillsNaturalBeef.com. Meathead and I have been talking about sausages. It's not exactly where I had the show going, but I'm loving it so far. So,
you and I get together.
Yeah.
We just go down a path and there's no coming back.
No, we're having fun doing all this. And so that's why I love it so much. So we are going to talk about smokers and grills here, or grills especially, in a few minutes. But here's the deal. Beings, we're talking about sausages. And everybody has seen this that has listened to this show or ever been to a barbecue. And I kind of touched on it in the first segment. Guys cooking the hot dogs, and they're black and they're charred. And there's always a stack kind of off to the side of the grill or the kettle or whatever you're cooking on. And they've been sitting there now for a long time, and they really look crappy, and you really wouldn't want to eat them. They're all shriveled up and look nasty. And the dog walks by and goes, "No, thanks. I'm good." Charcoal grill, direct or indirect heat. Now, I'll tell you, I'm kind of an indirect guy when it comes to hot dogs, because I'll take them a little slower. It doesn't take that long to cook them, you know. But don't put
either that or a very thin layer of charcoal.
Yes.
One of the keys to being good at grilling and smoking is to just think for a minute about the physics and chemistry. And even if you slept through physics and chemistry classes in high school, you got to get this. One briquette is half the energy of two briquettes, and two briquettes is half the energy of four. So the more briquettes you have, the more energy, the more heat. So if you've got a thick stack of briquettes, you're going to get a lot more energy, and it's going to brown faster, cook faster, and you're out of control, essentially, with a big, thick stack. Sometimes you want that for searing, but for something like a hot dog, one layer of charcoal, glowing embers, or your grill, gas grill on a low temperature will get enough infrared radiation to the surface that it will brown just like suntanning and won't burn it to a crisp.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I even do that. I do this several ways, but I don't mean to jump from sausage to chicken. But when I'm doing chicken legs, and every barbecue we have, and I don't care what I'm cooking, if there's going to be kids there, I always cook chicken legs for the kids.
Yeah.
That's just something I do. But I also cook those slower because I have very vivid nightmares kind of about the way my mom and dad cooked chicken on the barbecue when I was a kid, because it was never good. It was sauce went on
black on the outside and bloody on the inside.
Yeah, sauce went on 10 minutes into the cook, and you know what happened after that, my word. So,
well, I mean, we've talked about reverse sear before, but this is a perfect time to talk about it again, especially when it comes to chicken. Set up your grill almost always, no matter what you're cooking, in two zones, a really hot side and a not hot side.
Right.
And the really hot side is where all the flame and the glowing embers are, the charcoal. The not hot side, there's nothing underneath the food that's hot. And it'll cook over there because there's warm air flowing around the food.
Sure.
It's convection airflow. And that's where you do the majority of your cooking. It'll gently warm and roast the food, and you can throw wood on the fire, and it'll give it a smoky flavor. And then, and this is where chicken is perfect for this, you warm the chicken on that indirect heat side, and when it's almost done, 160, 165, you take it up to about 150, 155, using your digital thermometer, that's the safest way to cook. And then you move it over to the direct heat side, the hot side, where you're getting a lot of infrared radiation. And you lift the lid and you stand there. And you don't wander off to get a beer or to go to the bathroom.
Yep.
And you rotate those chicken legs so that one side is getting pounded with infrared radiation and the other side, the heat is bleeding off into the atmosphere. So you're just cooking the exterior, and you can get that skin beautiful, dark, golden, without blackening it, without burning it, without turning it to carbon. And you've got to watch it because there's a lot of fat in the skin. And that's the best way to cook chicken. Indirect side first, almost done. Finish it on the direct side with the lid open.
Yep. No, that works really good. And it, and if you're using a gas grill, you can, you know, certainly do that. And then what I do is if things aren't set up on the table, for example, I will put them on the low heat, no heat side, if you will, the side that's cooler. I will put them up on the rack above. I don't close the lid, but I keep them up there because there'll still be some warmth from the grill, because probably by that time I've gone on to do burger patties or whatever. You know what I mean? So they don't stay there for a very long time, but they can stay there and stay warm for a few minutes before you put them on the tray to put them on the table for the kids or whatever. That's just what I do. So, you know.
Yeah, that upper rack is a little cooler. It's not a lot cooler because the warm air is the same all throughout.
Right.
But it's not getting infrared radiation, and that's a really important differentiation. And I've used that term a couple of times, but let me just elaborate on the concept. You have three different kinds of heat inside of a grill. You've got conduction heat. The hot metal conducts heat more than air. And so when you lay it on metal, the metal is really hot, and that's why you get grill marks. It brands the meat or the vegetables. I mean, carrots and asparagus. That is your most intense heat. Your next most intense heat is the radiant heat, infrared radiation, which comes from the flames and the coals directly above them. And it's like, you know, sunburn, only, you know, sunburn is ultraviolet, but they're both on the, right. on the radiation scale. They're just a little different, different sides of the visible rays.
Sure.
It's a radiant heat. Then on the other side, away from the direct heat, you have convection airflow, which is your most gentle. And you go gentle. Most of us guys want to give it all she's got. We want to crank it up. We want warp 10. And that's the biggest mistake we make, is dial it down, control it, be in charge. Cooking is all about temperature control.
Yeah, most guys I go to and their barbecues, their only thing they're in control of is the beer intake.
Hey, but, you know, it's a darn fact. You go to a cookout, and the first thing the guys do is they go to the beer cooler, and then they go to the grill. And they all hang around to the grill, and they tell you you're doing it wrong.
Yep.
You got to turn up the heat. You got to turn down the heat. You should be using charcoal. You should be using lump charcoal. You should be using briquette.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, you know. I used to do that.
Close the lid. Lift the lid. That's what guys do, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I've kind of come to a deal where I put the barbecue away from the party. Okay, I keep it away from the party. Not a half a mile away, but you know, you can tell its distance. And my wife is actually really good about this. She'll say, "Don't bother him. don't you know, he's not being antisocial. Just don't bother him because he's kind of in his zone over there, and leave him alone. He'll come over and talk to you in a few minutes like that." And I do, but like you say, I can't tell you how many cooks I've done where you're standing there and the guy comes up and goes, "You know, I cooked a whole hog on a hibachi one time." And well, how'd that work out for you?
That's an image.
Yeah. Meathead and I are going to take a break. We're going to be back in a few minutes, wrap up Barbecue Nation right after this. everybody. It's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. Someday, well, no, I won't. I won't ever tell you what Meathead and I talk about in between segments because it's too much fun. But I will be checking on.
Yeah, I mean, if those women ever find out.
Oh, no, that's a bad deal. Bad deal. Coming up in the next hour, because we're now a two-hour show over most of our affiliates, we've got Jess Prilis is going to be the Tomahawk Queen from Texas. She's going to be telling us what's going on in barbecue in Texas. So just wanted to mention that. If you listen to the after hours on this show, which I hope you do, Meathead are actually going to, and I are going to talk about the subject we were going to talk about during the show, which was how to select a good grill, because it's the time of year that you maybe are looking for a new gas grill or a new charcoal grill or something. So we're going to be talking about that. We'll lead into it now just a minute, because we've got about 5 minutes here. What are your suggestions that people should look for when they go, especially to the big box stores? Because as we've said before on this show, the grills that you get at Home Depot and Lowe's and those kind of things are not exactly the same if you go to an Ace Hardware store that is a real like Weber dealer, so to speak. You know, they've got different models. But if you're going to go to big box, which is fine for most people, what should they be looking at?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things here, and you want to look at quality. Now, they really often have a lot of inexpensive grills and smokers. Often, you know, in anything, you get what you pay for. Those $200 gas grills are usually flimsy, and the paint will wear off, and it'll rust out in a couple of years. If you spend $600, it'll last more than three times as long as three $200 ones.
Right.
And you'll get a better unit in the long run. Think about investing a little bit in a device that's going to last. I mean, you wouldn't buy the cheapest oven on the market or refrigerator on the market. Get yourself a tool that will last a while that, you know, you don't have to cover it when you're done. You can just leave it. It's sturdy enough to stand up to the weather. Good cast aluminum, powder-coated metal, high-quality stainless steel will withstand the worst weather. I don't cover my grills. When I'm done cooking, they're too hot to cover, and I'm just too lazy, and they just last and last because I have some good quality products.
Yeah.
When it comes to a gas grill, there's no such thing as having too many burners. It's like a computer. There's no such thing as having too much RAM. The more burners, the better, because you can control heat better that way. Try to get a minimum of three burners. Four is ideal. Think about how many people you cook for, 4th of July, Memorial Day. If you're setting up a grill in two zones, you really are cooking on half the working surface at a time. Now, you can move things back and forth, like we talked about with the chicken. You start on the indirect side, finish on the direct side, but you don't have the whole capacity there. So you calculate a hamburger, for example, is 4 inches. You need to leave an inch around it, so it's 5 inches. Measure it, and you'll get a calculation as to how many hamburgers it can handle. Don't be swayed by the BTU statements. That's the how much British thermal units it has. It's like mileage on a car. It can be misleading because the distance from the surface where you're cooking to the burner will affect the energy that's reaching the food.
Yep.
So a low BTU unit where the burners are very close to the cooking surface may actually cook hotter than a high BTU unit where the burners are far away. You want the burners as close as you can get to the surface if you want to get a good dark sear. If you're a steak lover or a burger lover or a lamb chop lover, you want to get a good dark brown sear. And most gas grills just don't have the horsepower to do it. And as a result, you end up with grill marks, which are that Maillard reaction that we talked about, but in between, it's tan and gray, and it's not brown throughout, so you're not getting maximum flavor. Now, a lot of the gas grills now come with what they call sear burners, and these are burners that have extra power. If you can get one with a sear burner, you'll have more power, more juice. You'll be able to get a better dark sear.
There you go. We are out of time, but and folks, don't forget, if you're snooping around online, we'll be posting the after hours right after this show is aired on terrestrial.
Let's talk about charcoal grills in the after hours.
We will. But we're going to get out of here. Thanks for being with us today for Meathead and myself. We hope you have a great Memorial Day weekend, and take care, everybody.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved.